having and or had a wonderful day today. If you're new here, welcome. This is Beyond the Garment with me, your boy, Drew Joyner. If you don't know anything about me, I make fashion content on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and I have this podcast. And I started this podcast to generate and have conversations with people that I think are cool or interesting within the fashion industry, within the fashion world that I'm a part of. And today, we have another guest interview. I love guest interviews because, for one, I get to learn something. It's incredibly motivating to talk to the guests that I get to invite onto the show. And today's guest is someone who is such a fascinating and such a very, very poignant and interesting individual. You can see the title. It is Molly Riekers. I don't know if I'm saying that right. Last week, I was pronouncing Ave Granin's name incorrectly. I kept saying Av, and it was Ave, I'm pretty sure. Maybe I'm wrong on both fronts. Doesn't matter. Not the best with names. But Molly, who is this week's guest, is the account owner of an Instagram and TikTok account called Style Analytics, which is an Instagram page or a social media page focused on breaking down different style trends using data as the predominant or dominant way in which to look through fashion and view trends through that lens, right? Molly is an incredibly intelligent woman. She lives in the Netherlands, and I don't know, her content has always been something from the moment I saw it that really kind of stood out and was something that I wasn't really evaluating for my own personal style, which was using data as a way to understand and analyze trends and look at search terms and look at what is actually happening on Pinterest and with Google search trends and what are the things people are searching for and how does that correlate to what I'm seeing on my algorithms and how does that correlate to what I'm seeing in real life in places like Amsterdam or New York or London. So this is a really fun episode. If you've ever been curious about trends, data analysis, data and fashion, Molly is like nothing shy of a genius in terms of her intellect. So it's cool to be able to talk with someone who I know is just very, very up there when it comes to like just their smarts. I could tell she was very, very smart. And I'm not just trying to, you know, pad her stats right now. It's very, very true. Other than that, like if you enjoy this episode, if you end up enjoying the episode, make sure to give it a 5-star review on Apple or Spotify, wherever you're listening, or if it's Google or Overcast, whatever it is. Make sure to give us a 5-star review. It means a ton to me. And yeah, let's roll the live intro. This one's gonna be a lot of fun. Microphone. Okay.
Is my audio okay as well? I'm using wired headphones to try to be safe.
Audio sounds just like it does on Instagram to me.
Okay, which isn't very good. So
honestly, I love the kind of not like lo-fi. It's not like. Obviously, I'm using this like big Shure SM7B microphone right now. It's different than that, but like I feel like for the current mode of what content is, it's perfect. Literally perfect.
Thanks. It's literally me like whispering into my phone at like 7 a.m. trying to not wake people up.
Well, I had to watch every video. So every video starts with. So, so it's like, so it's so good. It's so good.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you.
How do I want to start this? Obviously, like, I don't know if you know Molly. Well, first of all, introduce you. You are, and this is an episode that I've been super excited to do, get done, because I think data and fashion has been something that is becoming more and more explored from a consumer standpoint, right? Like the world is just becoming more and more data driven with social media, with the ability to track every step we take with our smartphones, with the ability to track our calories, with our food. Everything is becoming more and more data driven. And I think as someone who's a little bit of like a computer nerdy kind of person, I had never kind of tied data to fashion. I always thought fashion was this relatively emotional thing. But human beings, as we act, as we engage in certain activities, there are trackable, plottable data points that are examinable. And I think that that is the exact niche that your channel, that others of your source have done. And I started following you, I would say, probably within the last 4 months-ish time frame. Mm-hmm. And every single one of your videos, I absolutely love. Obviously, you cater more towards a women's wear audience, but I still think like as a dude and as someone who just cares about fashion, every guy knows that women's wear, like women's clothing, women's wear is better than men's wear. We just all know that. We all get and understand that. And it's great to have you on the podcast. Now, I'm not even going to try to pronounce your last name because I you know, I did my homework. Okay. I know that you are in the Netherlands, correct?
Yeah.
Which is awesome. I love that country. We'll talk about that in a second. Okay. But Molly, how are you doing today? Style Analytics, Molly, how are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm honestly a little bit nervous for this interview. But overall, I know once we get into it, the nerves will subside and we'll just be chatting. But how am I doing today? Good. It's finally spring in Amsterdam. So it's like very beautiful and just appreciating the new shift that has happened in the past week or so.
Beautiful. Is it, has it been nice weather in Amsterdam during the spring?
Yeah. I mean, just now, like literally today was like the first day, like the sky opened. You finally saw the sun for the first time in 5 months. And yeah, but I heard, I was actually listening to your interview with Spretza. And that you were here for a while, which is very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I was. I was. I was going to say last year, but it's 2 years now.
Okay.
2022, I spent an entire month in the Netherlands. So we home based in Amsterdam and we went to Den Haag. We went to Utrecht. We went to Haarlem. We went to Rotterdam. We went to Alkmaar. We went to the small city of Best. Like we were doing things in the Netherlands. Okay. Like I was really trying to become a Dutchman. Okay. The Flying Dutchman. That's what I was trying to become. Black Dutchman. So yeah, I spent a lot of time in Amsterdam. I love Amsterdam. I love, cause I love biking. And I don't know. Are you like keen on, are you born and raised? We'll start there. Are you born and raised there?
No, I'm Canadian, actually. I have a very... All sounds are going to be very clear now.
I'm sorry to all the Canadians. That was me trying to make fun of like Canadian accents, but that, I don't know if it came across like it did.
No. It's okay. It's honestly really funny. And I appreciate when someone notices, which is really only Americans, because everyone here in the Netherlands will think that I'm American. And then I'm like, close, but not quite the same. I've been in the Netherlands now for 5 years. So it is sort of like a second home. Like I do feel pretty integrated with the city and the language and the people. So yeah.
Well, yeah, language barrier shouldn't be too, I mean, are you speaking any Dutch now or are you just still just sticking to English?
A little bit, like very basic conversation. I think as a tourist in Amsterdam, like you can get away with English, no problem. But then there's like very specific things that you would need Dutch for, like fashion related. Like I have a cobbler, which sounds very fancy, but I just like to get shoes repaired. And I need to like prep my Dutch before I go in because he doesn't speak English to like be able to describe what I want. And if you go kind of into the countryside, then it's just a lot nicer if you speak Dutch and then they don't, I mean, they can still tell that I'm not, but you know, putting in an effort, maybe feel a little bit more integrated. Yeah.
I love that. Good for you. Good. Because Dutch is not an easy language to just pick up. In fact, when we were there, and this is no knock on anyone, I have like one of my closest or one of my friends is like Toon and he's Dutch and we make fun of each other all the time. He makes fun of America all the time and I make fun of the Netherlands all the time. And one of the things that when I was there with my girlfriend and family and things, like every time we heard Dutch, we were like, what the heck is this language? Like, it's just like, I don't want to make fun of too many people. Obviously, it's all in good spirits and good lightheartedness. But cool, 5 years, that's amazing. And you're Canadian. And as an American, you can definitely like hear Canadian accents from the get-go. But that's awesome. That's really cool. It's cool that that's a part of your story. I've always wanted to live in another country like that myself. And so maybe we'll ask that towards the end of the conversation. But just to get things started off, I want this to be a holistic kind of conversation, right? I love having the podcast talk more than just fashion, and then we'll get into the fashion things. And did I ask you how to say your last name?
So Even it's tricky even for me. So in Canada, I would say
Really?
Rooyakkers. In the
Rooyakkers.
Netherlands, I would say Rooyakkers. And then even then, it was funny. I went to a gym for like the first few years, and I would go in, and the guy who would sign me into the gym would correct the way I would say my last name every single time for like 2 years,
Interesting.
because
Wow.
it's a very Dutch last name. Like my dad is Dutch, but I grew up in Canada, so I have this very Dutch last name without having a full grasp on the language and how they pronounce their vowels, unfortunately. So
Got
yeah.
it. Got it. Okay, very cool. Though we're getting more context as we go. All that to say that I wanted to kind of I want to frame the Molly Riekers, I don't know if I'm
Yeah,
saying it
close.
right,
It's good. Yeah,
story, right? So we'll start with question numero uno. Molly, tell us a little bit about Canada, growing up in Canada, what it was like for you growing up as a kid, and then we'll kind of move down the timeline and understand why you're been in the Netherlands for the last 5 years.
yeah. Yeah, in Canada. So I grew up in like a very rural community, in Canada, where like lots of farms, lots of trees, lots of nature. Like our closest neighbors were a 10-minute walk away. The closest town was like 1,000 people, and you had to get in your car and drive like 20 minutes.
Wow.
The closest mall, which kind of relates to fashion, was like an hour and a half away, so by car. So fashion felt very foreign and very far to me. And for some reason, I was growing up in this farm town with like not a lot of other people around, and just had this feeling from a really young age, honestly, where I was like, I don't belong here. I was romanticizing, being Canadian, romanticizing living in Toronto, or romanticizing living in New York, or like London, or one of these big cities. Because yeah, fashion just wasn't a part of how I grew up. My parents are like, and it's really admirable. They're a bit hippie-ish. They're like living off the grid. They kind of have the attitude of, oh, you already have a pair of boots. You don't need a second pair of boots. Why would you? That doesn't
My
make
parents are
any
like
sense. Yeah. Yeah.
that
So didn't have a lot of exposure to fashion growing up, but really kind of romanticized this idea. And when I could get my hands on fashion magazines, to my mother's dismay, she hated when I would, it was only, I was only allowed to buy them when I was sort of like a preteen into being a teenager, when I could start buy it, when she would even like let them in the house. And that was kind of my foray into kind of romanticizing being in fashion.
Definitely, definitely. And so I always like to recount these a little bit, but like, okay, what I'm getting is kind of a small town Canadian story, right? Which is interesting because in the US, there's so many depictions of this like small town American story. And Canada has always been kind of like a sister state to the US. A lot of the major cities in Canada are very close to the United States. There's kind of like central hubs. You talked about Toronto. Which is a city that I've also been to. It feels very similar to New York in a lot of ways. For you, when you were a kid growing up in kind of this small town Canada, so to speak, was there any at all, like was there any sort of fashion that you were able to look at in the physical, in real life, or was it all things that you were taking from magazines, books, outside of that kind of realm that you were currently physically living in?
That's a good question. There was definitely trends that happened, in my school, in my high school. It was sort of this funny thing where most kids who grew up there were farmers, and they would work on their parents' farms and stuff before school. And so they would come to school wearing their farm clothes. So they'd be kind of these big Timberland-esque boots and these big kind of bomber beige, jackets that they would wear on the farm. And then you would notice
Wow.
like kids who weren't farm kids would start wearing those to school, because those were like the coolest kids. You kind of had like farm trends, which I wasn't necessarily into. I was a bit of a weirdo in a way, where I was like looking at these fashion magazines and being like, oh, Chanel did gold buttons on their black cardigans, so I'm gonna so sparkly buttons onto my cardigans, and like doing
Got
weird
it.
shit like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So cool. So there was like a little bit of a pattern recognition amongst even the high schoolers in your school who were like, okay, like if these are the kids that we're recognizing as the cool kids or the kids who have kind of a bit of cachet, then that's the style we want to try to emulate, which is kind of a great base layer, because that's what trends is in a lot of ways, in these little pockets of communities, right? Mm-hmm. Which is really fascinating. But for you, it was a lot about these magazines.
Yeah.
So it was Vogue, you said. Like, what were the magazines you were kind of diving into?
Yeah, I think my first sort of obsession was, I don't think they exist anymore, but Vogue would do a special edition every year that kind of summarized the year in fashion. And because I had to, like, it was so weird. We didn't even really have these kinds of magazines in our town. And so when we would go into the city, which was like an hour and a half away, it was like the biggest fashion magazine I could find was like the Vogue Year End Reviews. And I think they started in 2010 and then they sort of trailed off. I don't think they definitely aren't releasing them anymore. So it was looking at these kind of year in review, like Vogue special edition. I also eventually got a subscription to Teen Vogue. And then eventually it was looking at collections online when that was a thing. And like, I just didn't know. I was like so uneducated. I was like pronouncing like I'm even gonna like fuck it up trying to like do the comparison, but like Dolce and Gabbana, I was probably saying like, oh yeah, I saw this at Dolce or like Dolce and Gabbana or something like that. Like I was trying, but I was definitely, I didn't really have anyone in person to like bounce those ideas off of, because that's just not something that you know, everyone was either like a farm kid or they were very athletic, like athletics were a really big thing.
Yeah.
And it just wasn't my thing. Like, as I said, I got along with people, but I just had this feeling like, oh, I don't really belong here. I belong in the city. I belong in New York.
Right, you don't fit in.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, for sure. And it's funny because if I think back to even my youthful, like, when I was younger, high school, and even even now, what am I saying? Mm-hmm. When you read certain brand names and you think you have it, and all of a sudden you hear the way it's supposed to be said, and it's so off. It's a hilarious revelation that takes place. especially, I think there was even a video I watched on like TikTok Reel, something like that, where it was like an actual Italian, going through how to say all the Italian like designer names, like, in his like native tongue, and basically he was like, everyone says it wrong pretty much, right?
but I mean, I feel like the normal person, I mean, of course, like get as close as you can, but I don't feel like I'm gonna roll my R's in like a beautiful Italian
impossible.
It's not gonna happen.
Impossible, truly impossible. But you do your best, which is, it's just interesting, right? It's just an interesting part of the story. Well, tell me about how, so there's a, like, it seems like when you were getting into fashion, obviously these Vogue articles are big. You always had this feeling inside that, hey, like, as I'm from a place that doesn't necessarily, everyone around me doesn't necessarily carry, or there's not many people, there's no one around me that carries the same level of interest in fashion and being kind of this like city girl that I do. what are the steps from going from that period in your life to now? Style analytics, like kind of catch us up to speed, because I feel like your story is a lot of people's story. There's a lot of people who live in small parts of the world where they don't necessarily have access to designer stores, pop-up events, all the things that happen in Amsterdam or in New York or in London and all these places. Like, there's a lot of people who are small town folks but really care about fashion and really engage with it. Obviously there's social media now, but like when you were younger, when I was younger, I don't know how old you are, but like, it seems like the world has shifted to everything being online. And I just want to know, I guess the question I want to ask, so I don't go too long, is what's the journey from Molly, who's like, damn, no one gets me in this place, to Molly, who's making fashion videos in Amsterdam? Because like, I know it's probably a huge jump, but like, I condense it, or make it as long as you want. Honestly, we have all day. Make it as long as you freaking want to make it. I'm curious.
Okay. Yeah, I'm trying to gauge. I guess my degree doesn't make so much sense, so I'll kind of explain that very quickly. Perfect. But when I was, so we were, not very close to anywhere where you could buy clothes. I had like a lot of like hand-me-downs as a teenager, so I sort of learned how to sew, whether it was to take things in from my cousins or to make my own stuff. And I mean, it's so horrible looking back now at the clothes that I was like making and photographed in high school. But you know, I did it, and it taught me how to sew, which is really cool. And I really thought I really wanted to go to fashion school, actually. And my parents, of course, were like, that is so unreasonable. Who goes to fashion school? And I was like, who does go to fashion school? I don't like, I was talking about this with family recently, but creative industry in Canada, especially rural Canada, it's just like not really, people don't know that it can be a viable career pathway to be creative or whatever. So I actually went into something completely different, which was I did a bachelor's in psychology, focusing in neuroscience, because I was also good at science, but I don't really like blood or needles or anything. So I was like, okay, brains are pretty contained, so I'll do neuroscience.
Perfect.
And then I got really into, so I did that in Canada, and then I got really into academic research and visual consciousness. So it's like this sect of neuroscience research that explores, you know, I think it's like 30% of your brain is responsible for vision, and how is my vision system different from yours, and are we perceiving the same thing? Is my blue
Interesting.
your blue?
Interesting. Can I pause you for 1 second?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, neuroscience is actually so interesting. This, like, just the sciences is fascinating because obviously it helps us explain why human beings and it just explains a lot of stuff, right? I can't remember what movie this was from. Tell me if this is true or not. This is like in my head about brain science. Is something about how we only use like 10% of our brain capacity. Something like we only use 10% of our brain's energy or something like. Hold on, let me.
I
Do you know what I'm
don't
talking about?
know. I think I've heard that quote, and I actually don't think it's true. I think we're using a lot more, because there's that movie where he takes the pill and then he can access, I think it's like Bradley Cooper or someone, and he can access the
Yes.
rest of his brain.
Yes, that's what it is. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's not true. I mean, we're sorry.
Okay.
We're of course not utilizing every part of our brain every part of the day, but you know, it's not like we're only using one isolated little section and then the rest is just unknown and empty. Like we're pretty good at mapping the
Yeah.
areas and what they're responsible for.
Cool. Damn
Yeah.
Hollywood.
Yeah, although it would be a cool idea, right? If we're really only using like a tiny little chunk of our occipital cortex at the back, and then the rest is just empty nothingness. And
Empty.
yeah, but no,
No.
it's if we put us both in an MRI right now, it'd be lit up and active. So
Very cool. Very cool. Okay, continue, continue. I don't mean to make. So you were talking about how you decided not to do a degree in fashion. You'd go into neuroscience. Obviously, you like focus on the brain. You're talking. Go.
And then basically I was in Canada. I was like trying to figure out what I wanted to do after my bachelor's, was applying to a few kind of like master's PhD programs, thinking that I'm going to be an academic and I'm going to study neuroscience and I'm going to solve the problem of consciousness. And then I found that there was actually kind of the coolest research in the world in this area is happening actually at the University of Amsterdam. And just on a whim was like, there was like something called a merit scholarship, and I like applied with this idea of a project I wanted to do with a very like specific professor at the University of Amsterdam, and they loved it. They're like, you're welcome in, here's your scholarship.
Wow.
So I kind of packed up all of my stuff into like, and I had never been here. I just packed up my stuff into a suitcase. Got on a plane and then moved, well, not exactly to Amsterdam. When I first moved here, I couldn't afford on the student stipend to live in Amsterdam. So I lived in a town just outside called Diemen. And then I would bike like 45 minutes into the city
Stop.
on my little bike, like
Even
on
during
my
the
Google
winter? What'd
Maps.
you do in the winter?
Most winters, because I was at the time, because now it's so stupid. Now you have like a, well, my perception is different of money, but at the t we had I have these cards, and now realizing it would probably have cost me 3 euros into the city and 3 euros back out of the city if I wanted to take the tram. But at the time, I was like, oh no, I'm biking, I need to save that 6 euros for something else.
Yeah.
So yeah,
Yeah.
so and then
Wow.
I just really liked it here. Academia was maybe like not what I expected it, even though I had a really great experience in the program, but I just kind of Randomly decided, not randomly, but kind of made the decision that I don't think I did the master's, and then I don't think a PhD is for me. I don't necessarily want to be an academic, but not really knowing what I wanted to do. So I got a job as a data analyst, for a market research team in a creative agency, which is the 9 to 5 job that I'm still at now. So essentially doing data-driven consumer research within a team of brand strategists. And then we use those insights with the brand strategist to inform like brand decisions.
Amazing.
And then
Amazing.
I keep saying and then, but
No, it's
you
great.
stop me too
I
much.
don't want to cut you off. That was my
Oh,
fault. That was my blunder just now. I shouldn't
no.
have said
No,
this.
but I just keep going.
That's good. This is perfect.
And then how did style analytics come around? So
Correct.
a year ago, May last year I started it. So basically a few things with kind of working in the creative industry, it depends on your clients whether you're enjoying it or not. And I was just in a phase where I wasn't really enjoying it. And I was like, okay, if I could work in as a data analyst in any industry that I could, what would it be? And I thought about it and be like, wow, fashion. Like that's what I was like initially passionate about. I had let go of it for 8, 9 years to really pursue academia apart from, paying attention out of personal interest. Of course, like wearing my own clothes, you have to get dressed every day. So, trying my best. But I kind of had that thought like, okay, if I could, apply my skills in any industry, what would it be? Fashion. Okay. Looking for jobs where I can integrate data and fashion. And I just really couldn't find anything. I found like one job at like a major, I mean, I can say it was like New Balance. I don't think it's a big deal to say it.
I mean, that's pretty
And
awesome.
yeah, I mean, but I didn't end up like getting that job. And then I just style analytics was a way for me to basically like for me to make my dream job for myself. I wanted to work as a data analyst in fashion. I can't really find a job that fits exactly what I want to do. So I'll just like do the dream job and post it online as sort of a side hobby. And that was, May of last year. And so that's kind of just been trucking along since.
And now Styanalytics has over 120,000 followers on Instagram since May of last year. I don't know if you do TikTok as well. I wasn't. I know you from Instagram, which is staggeringly impressive, right?
Thanks.
Also, with your story, there's a lot of things to unpack, like that I want to unpack. First and foremost, like I think it's amazing how you've been able to. It seems like you always had a good head on your shoulders in the sense that like. Obviously, there was a bit of like conflict is a dramatic word, but I'm gonna use conflict. Conflict between what maybe you would want your life to be and do when you were coming out of high school versus what your parents maybe thought was best for you. You always seemed like you did well in school. Obviously, that's why you were able to graduate with the degree that you did. It doesn't take a slacker to do that, right? But beyond that, like I think it's impressive that you still through all of the effort that you put into academics and academia, like you came back to the thing that interested you, right? Because I feel like for a lot of people who want to kind of create the dream job that you said that you've created for yourself, they doubt their ability to do so because they don't necessarily have the resume or don't have the experience to do it. But I think the era that we're living in lends to this idea that, if you have interesting ideas and you can convey them practically and effectively and efficiently on a social platform through video format, you can actually create a career out of what you're talking about and of what you're interested in, which I think is really, really powerful. And in a way, it kind of seems like the things that you were able to take from your 9 to 5, it seems like they're actually aiding you in helping make videos, the tools, the way that you should properly look at data, the way that you should actually like transcribe a piece of data and says, okay, this is what we can extrapolate from this data. I remember when I was in college, I graduated with a marketing degree, and so we had to take a class on statistics, and I used to Oof, that class, like I used to like always stay after because I don't know, statistics, it never came as natural to me, but like because there's a lot of math in it as well. And like, I, as much as I like love math for there only being one answer, you kind of hate it because there's only one answer a lot of times too. But I just remember like always being very, very impressed with how data can be a huge source of truth for a world that has so many different individuals, especially in marketing, who are trying to sell you on something, sell you on what the truth actually is. It's really fascinating. And obviously now with what you're doing with Style Analytics is kind of like, for me as a creator, I'll tell you straight up, who is someone who has made what I've loved to do as a career, like talking about fashion, wearing clothes, being an inspiration, kind of edutainment, for lack of better words, for the community. Your page has been an awesome source of saying, okay, like what are the tides of the industry? Where are they moving? Where are the pockets? Where are certain pockets moving? Which I want to thank you for that as well. Before we start talking more deeply about Style Analytics, one question that I feel like, you know, no one knows this about you because obviously you're always talking about other people's style, but I would be curious to hear what you would say about your own personal style. How would you describe your your personal style? How are your fits coming along these days?
How are my fits coming along? I feel like, yeah, personal style is a tricky one for me, not to get too deep or whatever about it, but I feel
get
like
deep.
I just feel like I haven't ever been able to like nail down a very specific personal style. Like, you know, a few years ago, I was doing like Alessandro Michele's like Gucci mixed with like Parisian French girl. So a lot of cardigans, a lot of colorful cardigans and straight leg jeans and like 70s inspired and thrifting a lot of like 70s pieces. And I still have all of those. I just keep everything because it's just nice to have a catalog. And now I feel like Amsterdam has worn off on me a little bit more, where it's a lot more modular and technical pieces. Honestly, if I see something in the thrift that can be worn like three different ways, I'm like, it's mine. It's coming home with me. Like the shirt, these zippers are functional, so you can zip it in all sorts of ways. So a lot of like asymmetrical, technical, modular, sort of like the Gorp core pieces is kind of what I've been into the past few years. But of course it's like, it's nice to have, I just keep everything. And so if I want to dress up as somebody else one day, then I have the resource to do so.
Amazing. Do you feel like your style is in a good place, or do you feel like there's some ambiguity? Do you feel like there's like some, not losslessness with it, but like kind of like, it can go so many different ways and I feel confused about it in a sense. Like, do you feel good or do you feel like, I don't really know?
Yeah, I feel like actually since starting Style Analytics, it's been a lot more, there's been a lot more ambiguity because I think I'm spending less time on my personal style. Cause if I'm looking, it used to be if I was looking through fashion content, it would be in reference to myself and what I would like. And now if I'm looking through fashion content, I'm always looking at it through the Style Analytics. Like, okay, is this relevant? Can I write this down? What category would I put this trend into? What does the data say? And also just less time into my own personal style. But I feel like, yeah, I'll go through phases where I'm like, wow, this is great. I've had like six good fits. And then sometimes it's like, I have no idea what to put on today.
I mean, that happens with everyone, right? Sometimes you just have a day where it's like, I just got to chalk it up to, this is going to be a lazy day outfit, no matter what I try. It's all right. That's the perfect.
Oh, I kind of aside, you can cut this if you want, but it's a little bit difficult because I live with my partner and he has the most concise, perfect sense of style. Everything makes sense in his wardrobe. Every piece is like so perfectly selected and it's timeless. It never changes. And so he's like, why do you have so many clothes? And I'm like, cause I'm not you. So yeah.
Perfect. this is a perfect segue into talking more about Style Analytics, right? Because I think that is the main lens that I know you from. Obviously, it's actually really interesting to hear. I would love to like pick your brain about psychology and neuroscience too, because I think that for me, one of the biggest things that I'm trying to uncover with on YouTube mainly, because I talk more about trends on YouTube, is this connection between psychology, anthropology, the decisions that human beings make, the patterns we recognize, and the reason why every so many weeks, years, decades, things change, right? Mm-hmm. Nothing stays the same in terms of what we find interesting, in terms of technology that gets brought into the space, in terms of events that happen that change the course of why things happen, and all these things. It's a big conversation. Let's mm-hmm. narrow it down. Let's get into the process of what it means to make one of your videos. How does making a style analytics video begin?
Yeah, depends on the kind of video. I think I do sort of two types of videos well. One is like trends, and then one is more sort of data-driven commentary, for lack of a better word. But maybe the trends are maybe more interesting to start with. So there's two ways I kind of go about it. So one is like a more exploratory way. So I learned how to program in university, and you have access to the Google Trends API. So essentially I can put in a single keyword and get hundreds of related searches and their search volume. So I could put in aesthetic and then everything, the top 1,000 search terms that have the word aesthetic in it. Or outfit or core or Gucci or Prada or whatever brands. So then I can kind of generate these massive data sets, and I can literally just see which search terms are generating a lot of growth and a lot of interest online. And so that's kind of an exploratory way. And that might be a starting point for me to start on a video, like, oh, what is this aesthetic? Why is it trending? Looking into it more. And then I think on the other side, I also have just a huge Notion document full of all the trends I'm seeing, whether it's Fashion Week, runway, influencers. There's a few very specific people that I really kind of keep an eye on, what they're doing, and then categorizing the trends into these blocks on like 1960s trends, corporate trends, this kind of thing. Sort of as I'm collecting all of that, starting to generate ideas for videos. And because that's more traditional trend research, I'll always, if I'm going to talk about a trend, then reference the data. So, you know, it used to be TikTok. TikTok API has been reduced significantly. So now it's usually Google search data or Pinterest data. And then the other side of things is maybe what's more interesting, like from a technical perspective, but the data-driven commentary stuff. So if something big is happening in fashion, I might use code to scrape a few thousand comments on a particular topic. Like, I think the last one I did was on Sean McGurr's Alexander McQueen debut, because there was a lot of controversial opinions. So use the Instagram API and a bit of code to scrape a few thousand comments, and then a few processes like topic modeling and natural language processing algorithms to basically detect what are the most common conversations, what is the sentiment, what are people talking about the most within these comment sections? So then I can say, oh, Alexander McQueen, you know, this debut, here's the top three concerns people have. Although these concerns exist, the sentiment was majority positive or whatever. So those are kind of the two types of videos I do.
Wow. It's so thoughtful. Like, the amount of thoughtfulness that goes into your videos is a bit unprecedented in some respects, because I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, I'm coming at this from a point of view of where, you know, a lot of the content that I see on fashion's side of short form video, it comes from an emotional place, right? Like, people feel so strongly about something, or people evoke an emotion in someone else with their outfit or with their commentary or with something that they're saying, right? With their ability to sell product on something. Mm-hmm. But for you, it just seems like there is this real poignancy to like be as thorough as you can to see where you're, not opinions, to see where the actual substance of a conversation is coming from. I heard a couple of things. One being, like, there are a couple of individuals, whether it be, I'll call them like key tastemakers, who you're looking at and seeing what they're doing. Mm-hmm. It seems like there's events. If there's like a fashion show, a red carpet show, a trend online, that's kind of like 2 and 3. Mm-hmm. What else can you talk to in terms of like references? Because obviously a lot of what you're doing is online focused, right? And so obviously the conversation takes, there's a huge conversation going on online. What is there any other place that you can think of besides like those ones that I just mentioned that are references that you're pulling from? Obviously like search data from Google, Pinterest, anything else?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm really influenced by the city I'm in. It's like really hard not to be. Like if I see, you know, chef shoes have been like such a thing for a few years here. And then now like Amy Leon Goh is like doing their chef shoe. And I'm like, oh, wow. I wonder. So unfortunately, like I wish I could be a bit more, you know, data, everyone's like, oh, it's so objective. It's so objective. But sometimes the trends that I talk about are subjective to me because my methods have brought me there, or I've seen it in person. And that's brought me like, I appreciate you saying my videos are thorough, but sometimes it's like, oh, I saw a Kangol hat on, you know, a cool guy at the grocery store, a girl sitting in a nice cafe. Let me check the search volume data on that. All right. That's a video. And, you know, so I am sort of subjective in that I am influenced by the people around me, because Amsterdam people, it's not like the fashion city, but it is a pretty cool fashion city. And there's cool little pockets to hang out in where people are doing really interesting, innovative things with fashion. So
definitely. I've always felt Amsterdam was an underrated fashion city. Like you have Tokyo, you have Paris, you have Milan, you have London, you have New York. And that's kind of like tier one. And tier two, you have these other cities that I'm not going to try to put everyone into, but Amsterdam's in that tier too. Okay. Yeah. And it was surprising to see, like, there are a lot of fashionable elements. And I think it's an interesting, you come at it from a very interesting point of view. Canadian born and raised, obviously very much probably influenced by, Toronto, Montreal, Canadian fashion, Canadian aesthetics, also comes with American aesthetics. Then you travel and now you're in an international city like Amsterdam that has the European influence. You have London, that's not too far. You have Belgium, you have Antwerp, that's not too far. You have Paris, you have France, you have all those elements, those people who travel from those places of the world to come visit Amsterdam to see the canals and see all the things and go to the coffee shops, whatever it may be. Like that's influencing you. And so, you know, I never had thought about your content from a European lens, but I think it's safe to say that I think there is a European scope that plays onto kind of the content and what you're seeing because of where you live, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Let's see here. I lost my train of thought on the question front of things, so I'm looking at the questions. Now, this is a weird question, and I kind of get why I asked it. I wanted to ask you, do you think there are elements within fashion that cannot be encapsulated within data? Like, obviously, the biggest marker, in my opinion, when it comes to being able to track something is sales. For me, right? Like if you can say that year over year, month over month, your sales were 10 units sold and now they're 3,000, obviously there's something taking place, right? You don't really have access to that data. You have access to different types of data. But that to me is like obvious. Now for the data that you have access to, search volume is another one of those things that's like obvious. Like, right? Like 3 months ago, the search volume data was this, right? It was steady. And then all of a sudden it shoots up, right? Mm-hmm. And you see that there's interest taking place. Mm-hmm. That's not the kind of the question I want to ask. I want to know, like, is there anything that you can think of? Or if there's not, it's okay. Is there anything that you feel like that cannot be encapsulated through data when we're talking about the fashion industry, when we're talking about online fashion culture, we're talking about your world? Is there anything that can't be encapsulated with data?
Yeah, actually a lot of things. I think data can actually be quite limiting in certain ways. I think genuine forecasting can be lost because, if people are searching for something and I pick that up, it's, people are already searching for it. It's probably, the diffusion of innovation curve. It's probably in the innovators. It's probably in the early adapters, early majority. But when it comes to genuine forecasting, there's people who are doing fashion forecasting 2 years, 3 years, 5 years in advance down the line. And the data related to very specific fashion pieces is not going to show you that. Now, there's a few different things that I'm sort of playing around with that haven't really made it into a video yet, but looking for other kind of cultural things within the data and then putting my own opinion into how could this affect fashion. Like there's an really heightened increased interest in microplastics right now, and a really heightened awareness over the past year. And so, if I show that data and then I say my own opinion on how I think that awareness could affect fashion in the future. But I think that long-term forecasting is definitely lost in the data. I think sales would be great data to look at. Like, I don't know how many people are actually buying mob wife aesthetic. Like, I don't know. And I mean, that's a great example of one of those trends where people are searching for it, but are people really buying into that trend? Like, I don't think so. I don't think they did. So you lose a lot in the data. The data is just like one very small part.
Got it. With mob wife aesthetic, I don't know if you know this. I've made a video, I can't remember, I think about trends, about hot like trends, like understanding 2024 trends on YouTube. And I use a clip from your video to like talk about the mob wife aesthetic. Actually, I'll send you a link so
Okay,
you can,
cool.
I even gave you a little shout out.
Oh, okay, I
But
didn't see that.
with forecasting, have you ever heard of WGSN?
Yes,
Yes.
I would die for their trend curve software. Oh my God.
They seem to have the secret sauce when it comes to predicting things. And honestly, I only recently learned about WGSN because I had just gotten more seriously into understanding like why do people think that this is going to happen or this is going to happen? Because people will DM me and they'll be like, Drew, are Sperry's coming back? Or is this coming back? Is this happening? Is this happening? And in reality, I didn't have any other way to say I don't know, other than the fact that like I couldn't say anything other than I am not sure or I feel like this, right? And I feel like I just felt like it wasn't a strong enough answer. And the more I learned about WGSN, the more I learned that a lot of brands use WGSN to be ahead of the curve, to try to be ahead of the curve. And it almost feels like this kind of like dog chasing its own tail, self-fulfilling prophecy. If everyone's following a forecast that they believe that this company has the ability to look into the crystal ball and predict something, then yeah, of course it's going to come into fruition if that's what that's the Kool-Aid we're all drinking.
That's a good
Which is
point.
this is interesting. But so about WGSN. What are your thoughts about like forecasting companies like WG? Obviously they're like the big boy. What do you think about those kind of things?
Yeah, I mean, I would love to have access. I'm just very curious, but they're very expensive platforms. I think also it is a bit tricky when you were talking about all the brands looking at WGSN. WGSN is making a few very specific predictions every year, every quarter. And so if all of the brands are focusing on that, then we're going to get a bunch of brands doing the exact same thing. Which
True.
is a bit, in an industry where I really think that designers should be leading the way. I don't think it should be forecasters. I don't think it should be, I mean, influencers to a certain degree, but when you see a house like Chanel and they're doing all this like ballet core crap and you're just like, that sucks. Like, I see what you guys are doing and it sucks. Like, it's such a good, there's so many good references. But it sucks. Like, they have so many good references from their past archives and their collections and all the probably talented people who are working there. So anyway, I think it's a hard line because I would like access. This is like my line of work. But I think forecasting is maybe not the only thing that designers should rely on. And I say that as someone who does forecasting for fashion brands on the freelance side, but I can't really compare my services to WGSN because I yeah, the data and the stuff that I'm pulling is very custom to whatever client, where WGSN has just kind of a bank of here's everything that's going to be trending, and it's not necessarily customized to the specific audience or industry. Well, yeah, the industry, but yeah, do you know what I mean? I'm kind of
I get what you're
like,
trying. I get what you're
yeah.
trying to get at. It's like it's specific, it's catered, but it's like also has this, it's for the companies that that obviously the pay the lump sum, right, too. So one of the questions I also wanted to ask you that, like, I feel like this is one of the harder questions that has been on my mind, is that there's this idea, especially online, that, you know, a lot of people feel trend fatigue, right? Like, I've seen it in my comments, I've seen it in your comments, I've seen it in other creators' comments when they talk about trends. It's like, people will say everything feels like it's trending. What do you think about this idea that, or what do you think about this statement that everything is trending? Do you agree with this notion that everything is trending? Do you think that it's bad, not bad, but it's like misplaced thought on what trends are taking, like how trends are taking place? Do you get what I'm trying to ask?
Yeah.
Or am I maybe asking it in a weird way? I
No,
guess,
no,
yeah, I don't
no.
know.
You make sense. It's just, it's my face looks like this because I don't really know how to answer the question. I think everything, in a way, not that they're trending, but it's sort of this weird era where you could literally style anything and make it look cool. Like there's, people who are still wearing AF1s from like the first time they were popular, and then there's people who are wearing them now again, kind of ironically or post-trend, or like to be alternative and edgy. And there is so much trend content. Like there's so many people doing, what I do, or on TikTok saying, here's five trends for spring, that I get exhausted too, honestly. And I like trends, but I also am working to kind of diversify my content as well, because I see people having that sentiment, and I feel it myself too, where it's like I'm producing three videos a week. I can't say there's three new trends every single week,
Totally. And so for you, like your content strategy, I know you mentioned commentary. What other things are you thinking about for your content strategy moving forward?
Yeah, I think that's something I'm actually working on as I've sort of started to hit a wall with trends. I mean, of course, it's like my base, it's what I'll always kind of go back to. But I think looking at more long-term forecasts, more broad forecasts, looking at bigger cultural shifts and how that could impact fashion more generally, rather than being like ballet flats or capris or these kind of smaller things. So predicting, which I do enjoy, like broader aesthetics, broader eras that people can then take reference or take inspiration from, rather than just promoting a very specific item. And then as well, like giving content that does give commentary on conversations that are having that are already happening online, whether it's the debate around fur making a comeback or a certain campaign that people are really divided on. Yeah, but I'm still working on it.
Makes a lot of sense, and it's not easy to figure out what you want to say after you've said a lot, right? I mean, like your videos, you've had videos that, you know, have reached hundreds of thousands, millions of people, and it feels good to be able to get recognized probably by the audience that, you know, there's interest in the things that you say, there's interest in the opinions that you pull from, but it's always kind of challenging, a little bit like scary, nerve-wracking to do something different than what people expect you to do, to try to generate a conversation on a different corner of your mind, of the internet. And it might take a little bit of time for you to kind of iron that out a little bit too. I know you have a lot of things you're doing. I know you're doing the Substack right now. I know you have a kind of workshop PDF that allows people to understand how you actually go through and make the decisions and make the videos that you make, and that kind of thing. You even have a website, and it highlights some of the things you've done for Vogue, and you've written for other places. I feel like you kind of touch a lot of places, and you do a lot of things to make sure that you're always sharp to the tack about kind of what you're presenting in fashion, which I think is really cool.
Thanks.
So there's a couple of things. So we're kind of coming to the close. I feel like I could ask you a million and one questions, like about a ton of different things. It's very interesting to hear kind of how you approach making videos and how you approach fashion. I think your mind is really, really sharp in that regard. I guess before we kind of jump away from like the video aspect of things, and I just kind of get your opinion about different trends and things like that. What was, or was it on purpose? Is there a decision, or was there a thought behind a decision to not show your face, to never allow people to know a face to style analytics other than the faces that you show that are the pieces that are being talked about?
Yeah, that's a good question. There was like a lot of factors that went into that. One was I didn't necessarily feel it was necessary for the content that I was making. It wasn't really about me. It was being kind of about, and I hate this word, but this sort of subjective figure behind the data. And then the second fold of that was I am very sensitive. And if I get a negative comment, I will really think about it and I will really consider it. And I've seen friends who do content, who do lifestyle content, and they get destroyed on a personal level about their lifestyle, their looks, who they're with, what they're doing. And I just, you know, the content that I was making allowed me not to put myself out there in that way. And I'm really grateful for that, because I know I could handle it, but I would rather not take on a lot of personal criticism. Or more than I already get.
Totally. Sometimes you gotta put you first. Sometimes you have to you have to know yourself. And I think it's huge. It's a big important lesson for a lot of people to understand, is like the internet is incredibly cutthroat. Incredibly. I've heard some, I mean, I've had guests on the show who've created content who've had death threats from fashion opinions. Literally.
Yeah.
And so there are a lot of people who are obviously in a lot of pain as well. And that kind of shows through a lot of the comments. And then there are a lot of comments that, you know, sometimes the comments of a video can make a video more engaging, just if it's something that's confusing or controversial or whatever it is. But it does play a negative role in your life if you internalize the comments about you, you know what I mean? It's tough. Even I struggle very, very heavily with, if I read something and if someone goes out of their way to give me constructive criticism about like maybe like there's a fact or something I get wrong, I'm like, I love those kind of comments, because like then it's forcing me to be better. But if the comment has anything to do with the color of my skin or the fact that I don't fit into an archetype of a person, that like these kind of things, like it shows how a lot of times how broken the world is. And I totally understand why you've made that decision. And it's also a part of the allure to your content a little bit, I would say. That like a part of it is like before doing the research, like the homework on it, I didn't really like, I never really cared to know who it really was, because like obviously the ideas is what mattered. But obviously for this interview I wanted to know, and it was a pleasant surprise to figure out a little bit about who you were before getting on. And it'll be cool for those who care, who obviously like a part of my audience. Like this audience isn't anything crazy. Like a lot of people here are very considerate and things like that. It'll be cool for them to also get to hear your voice and things of that nature.
Yeah. Thanks.
Of course. So I have a couple things, a couple last things I want to poke into, and then we can kind of round it up here, because we don't want to take too much of time. I know it's getting late there. It's probably close to bedtime. And you're getting a little bit tired. I get it. Real quick, I want to ask one trend question.
Yeah.
Sorry. Two trend questions. And then I want to ask you kind of a last concluding question. So first trend question. What have been, in your opinion, some of the biggest trends of 2024 so far? We're in April. April 2nd is the date of the recording of this. I'm giving you some time to think. Maybe you've already thought about this, because I've given you. What are some of the biggest trends of 2024 so far?
I think randomly, and I I love this and I hate this, and I know this will get some criticism, but I do think the best, some of the biggest trends, at least that I've been watching go really big online, have been really able to be encapsulated into those core aesthetic terms. So I think the way that Mob Wife took off, it crazy. I'd never seen anything like that. Like just the search volume 0 to 5 million in one day. And I think the lasting impression from that was, sort of this in weird conversation happening around fur and that making a comeback. And I don't think that Mob Wife will necessarily be trending next winter, but that the floodgates have opened about fur and the ethics of thrifting fur versus fake fur versus buying new fur. And it's opened up a lot of conversations into animal products in fashion. So that has been a really big one. And then you see the little residuals of that trend, like the cheetah print and the fur bags and the fluffy boots and all of those sorts of things.
Totally.
And then I also kind of, and I did, I'm not to pat myself on the back because it wasn't that far out of a prediction, but I did kind of predict this one. But the sort of office core, like office wear, office siren, like grunt, I was calling it like corporate grunge or something last year, which is not the term that got picked up at all. But I think it really reflects people's increased interest in thrifting because it's such an easy trend to thrift. You buy a button up or a mini skirt and you style it in a different way, or you style it in a way that's like maybe a little bit more provocative than it would be traditionally worn.
Worn, yeah.
And I'm trying to think of one more like good trend. I think we've seen a lot more. There was a talk about indie sleaze for the past few years, and I am seeing like a little bit more messiness and eclecticness. There's like that eclectic grandpa trend, which
Yeah.
I hate that term.
Eclectic grandpa.
I didn't even make a video on it. I was like, I can't with this one. But it is sort of this idea of throwing things together that wouldn't traditionally match. And you see Gen Z doing a lot of that. And it's like, is this even a cohesive outfit? Does this go together? Is it cool? I can't tell.
Yo, Gen Z will put anything together and call it an outfit. And I'm technically a part of Gen Z, but like guys, we have to stop doing that. No, I'm just kidding. Everyone dresses the way they want. I'm just kidding.
I'm the oldest Gen Z, and I look at the younger ones and I'm like, I don't know what you
Same.
guys are doing.
Same. Same. There was a I don't know if there's a YouTube channel called Jubilee, and they did a video comparing Gen Z style to millennial style. And it's always interesting to watch these kind of videos because it kind of shows at a macro level what people think about both styles, symbolically, right? Because when I say Gen Z style, we probably both think about two different things. We might have some moments that are things that intersect, but we have our different points of view. Once again, you're living in Dutchland, I'm living in the concrete jungle, right? So like there's that. And so yeah, anyways, the whole point of that is to say that it's just interesting. Very, very cool trend breakdown. I would say that all of those trends are things that I see on my For You page, explore page quite often, especially the one, I mean, we're talking about women's wear versus men's wear too here, but I see a lot of the like, she likes older men, so I decided to dress like my grandpa videos, type videos. You know what I mean? And I see a lot of, and maybe I'm a part of it too, 'cause even more recently, I've been wearing more kind of just older, more timeless, lapelled button downs with ties and just different things that are more grown up, less kid, if that makes sense, right? And I don't know if that has to play with, and I also see it when it comes to this conversation about, sneakers no longer being this very important taste-making symbolism for what it means to be stylish. You have ballet flats, you have kitten heels, you have loafers, you have different boots, you have all these different things that are kind of the new norms of what it means to have stylish footwear. And I think it's really, really interesting. Last trend question I want to ask you, what about put the objectivity to the side. What about personally? Like, are there any trends that like, or things, even within the last 3, 4 years, where you're like, You know, I'm gobbling this up. I love this. You talked a little bit about GORP Core. We're in an era of GORP 2.0, if you don't know.
Okay. I'm just kidding. I thought calling it technical wear now. GORP Core was, you know. So
I've heard GORP 2.0. I've heard technical wear. There's terms. We have a lot of terms out there in the world. Yeah. But what about for you? Anything that you're loving in terms of trends?
It's a tricky question. I'm doing a lot of dresses over jeans right now, which seems very Gen Z of me. And I very promise I'm trying to do it still in a way that's a bit more cohesive and everything.
That is so Gen Z. That is so, you just said you don't like throwing things. Yeah, it's so Gen Z of you. I don't know how you're styling it, but that's very Gen Z.
Yeah. But it's fun because then I have all these like new outfit combinations that I would have never. And that's kind of what I like about trends is like, oh, here's an opportunity to style things that I already own in like a very new and interesting way. And
totally.
Finding new purposes for clothes that I already have. So that's kind of the one that I'm eating up right now. It's love always it. A dress over jeans or pants.
Love it. Love it, love it, love it. And I like this. I like this idea of repurposing clothes. I think Gen Z is much more aware, and Gen Alpha will be even more aware of the fact that, you know, there is an environmental impact to the activity that we engage in with fashion, right? Mm-hmm. I actually was really happy, and I'm not saying I wore these clothes in particular, but it was cool to see all the people who, instead of, you know, getting rid of old t-shirts and things, they were cropping them. They were like DIYing a lot of garments. That was something that I noticed kind of like last year, whether it was with jorts or things like that too. A lot of people were making jorts and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. Molly, it has been awesome to get you onto the podcast. For this episode and for my audience, I think it's something that people will hopefully like took a lot of value from. I think hopefully if people who didn't know as much about you and wanted to learn more about you, hopefully they learned a little bit about you in particular as well. I have one final question for you, and then you can take your long Dutch slumber in the Netherlands. Okay. So it's another tough question, but I'm going to throw it at you. What do you think that we will think, you, I, people who are living right now and engaging in social media right now, what do you think all of us will think in 20 years when we look back on the early 2020s, late 20-teens, when we look back on this era of fashion, what do you think some of the things that we will say about this era of fashion 20 years from now? That's a forecast question that's not easy to answer, but I hope you have a good answer.
I hope so too. I think honestly the way that I look back at 2020 fashion is how I feel like we'll look back at the entire decade. 2020, I feel like, was so chaotic with TikTok first coming out, and there was so many micro trends and people burning their House of Sony dresses 1 month after buying them. Like, I just feel like that was such a chaotic era in fashion, and we've sort of come out of it a little bit, but the trend cycles are still incredibly, incredibly quick. And I think, you know, there is going to be this trend fatigue, and there is going to be a heightened focus on personal style in the upcoming years. So I'd imagine that we look back at this, the same way we look back at 2020, being like, what was that rapid trend dumpster fire that we were dealing with at that time? So that's my opinion.
I love it. Molly Ruyakers, Style Analytics, it was great having you on the show. Any other thing that you want to kind of plug right now in terms of how people can get connected with not only your content, but I know you have a ton of resources that you also put a lot of work into. I think a lot of people would love to hear about those things.
Yeah. So Instagram is my main platform, but most content is also on TikTok, if that's your platform of choice. If people are interested in learning how I do trend forecasting and sort of an introduction to data-driven fashion trend research and forecasting, I do have an ebook available, which is link in bio in my Instagram. And then I am more recently exploring kind of both trends and kind of bigger ideas that require a long form platform on my Substack. So yeah, those are kind of, I would say, like Instagram and Substack are the two places where I'm most active.
I just got the Substack and I can't wait for that. So I'll be there.
Cool.
I'll be in. Can you comment on Substack? I think you can.
Yeah, you can comment on
I'll be in the
Substack.
comments, so
Okay,
come hang out with me in the
thanks.
comments.
Cool.
Molly, thank you so much again.
Thank you. This was so much fun.